Tango Tango Papa 1956, March 12, 2016.
Have we seen the actual reality of a monstrous crime? Or merely an illusion, the product of a tortured brain?
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Tom Wiles here with you, coming to you this evening from Winslow, Arizona. So, after spending last night at Amarillo, I drove and made it to Winslow, Arizona. And looking at the GPS, I've got 494 miles to drive tomorrow. Of course, tomorrow is Sunday. I guess tonight, in the middle of the night sometime, we spring forward back to daylight savings time. So that, at least with all of the clocks that I have with me here in the truck, that all should happen automatically. So, you know, that's with most of the clocks that I have, that's the case. But at home, I've got a couple of wall clocks that I'm lucky if I remember to ever change them. Sometimes the whole thing will go by and they'll be off an hour for, you know, until the thing switches back to whatever it is. I think it's the clock right now. I think both clocks are right. And then, of course, unless I change them whenever I get home, they'll be off an hour. So, I don't know. It's not a big priority, but used to. I wore a wristwatch for years, and I stopped that, it was probably 1998, 1999 is when I stopped wearing a wristwatch. The main reason I did that was because I had a cell phone with me, and the wristwatch just seemed to be it was too much or whatever, and so just kind of a pain in the rear. And so I ditched it and never looked back. And the strange thing is, if you've got a wristwatch, then you end up with the habit of checking it all the time. And then the problem with that, if someone sees you, if you're having a conversation with someone and they see you glancing down at your wrist, there's a really good chance that they're going to ask you, do you have to be somewhere? Am I taking your time up? So there's still people that wear wristwatches, but not as many people as used to be. And I don't know, that's why I think this smartwatch thing is maybe it's a niche product, but I don't see a lot of people adopting it. In fact, I don't even pay attention to it. So I'm sure I probably, if I would go in this truck stop right now, I might be able to find somebody that had a smartwatch, but the problem is I don't even know what to look for. Now, if you get a smartwatch or a watch of any kind, then you're probably going to begin to notice if other people have the same smartwatch or any smartwatch model or even watches in general. But it's, I don't know. Since I got the cell phone and I think with a huge bulk of people, wristwatch is just, you know, either they're wearing it deliberately as a fashion statement, or you have people that just can't give up their wristwatch, or maybe some people have tried to do the smartwatch thing, but I think that it's just as a necessity, usually it's just not, most people don't have a need for it anymore. And really, you don't need to be, or at least I've come to the conclusion, I don't need to be glancing nervously at the clock all the time. Now, when in, of course, here in the truck, I have the GPS, and the GPS has got the time on it. And, of course, that's set by the GPS satellites, and it changes with the time zones that I'm in. And it's very handy because I typically have unloading appointments, loading appointments, etc. And so then I do have to follow it, and it's right there, and it's handy. And I don't have to, as I say, I've gotten completely away from the idea of, or the reality of wearing any kind of wristwatch. For a time, I actually had a pocket watch. But the problem, you know, pocket watch is kind of a novelty, but then, of course, it takes up space in your pocket. And then if you want to check the time, you've got to get it out of your pocket and open it up and look and see what time it is. So that's, I think, a pocket watch is really more of a novelty item in this day and age than anything else. Now, of course, before the wristwatch, if you go back in time, people did have pocket watches. So, but these things change over time, and technology has made it possible to know what time it is without, and it sort of disrupts what happened, what went before. So, but like I say, I don't think that the smartwatch thing is, it's kind of a problem, or a sort of a solution, sort of a half-baked solution in search of a problem. Why do you need something that's networked to your cell phone if you're carrying your cell phone around with you all the time? Why do you need something that's networked to it so that, you can just glance down and see the notifications? Right. Whatever. In a sense, a smartwatch or a smartphone is sort of like a smart pocket watch that does all kinds of other things. So you may be wondering, why am I recording another podcast? This is the third one in 3 days. And the answer is, I just sort of felt like it. I got a few little ideas that I want to talk about. After the podcast I was recording last night, one of the ideas that I was talking about was how resentment stops us from the knowing, allowing that to catch up with us. That's one of the things that we do. It's the sin that separates us, and then it comes packaged with its own denial mechanism, and further resentment also helps distance us even more, helps drive a wedge between ourselves and that knowing that would inevitably catch up with us if we were still in the right way. And that, of course, drives you to become an externalized person, and it becomes necessary to, you're really driven to live your life by comparison. Comparing yourself to other people, you're externalized. So then people, places, and things become very important. Do people have more than you do? Or do you have more than someone else? etc., etc. Do they look better than you do? Do you look better than they do? It becomes a real obsession. And of course, you know, that people say, well, I want equality. Well, if you want equality, equality is one thing, but then if you say, well, I want liberty, if you really know what liberty is, you can't liberty sort of and equality sort of mutually exclude each other. Because if you have real liberty, then you're not going to have equality. You're going to have some people that want to work and achieve, and then you have other people that just aren't motivated to achieve as much, and you're going to have inequality by definition. And so if you're going to try to equalize everybody and make everybody the same, then you're going to have to demotivate people. You're going to have to, because you don't want them having more than the other people do, got to begin to demotivate them, take their things away that they've worked for, take that away from them, because you can't have inequality. So it's a prescription for disaster. You go back to the French Revolution, and their rallying cry was they wanted equality, liberty, and fraternity. Now, what the hell is fraternity? And, you know, sound brotherhood or whatever, but it's false. So I was I came across a book, and it's a Russian author, and didn't know I was going to necessarily talk about this, so I should have probably had it opened, but let me see if I can find it. Okay, let's see. But I bought a couple of books, 99 cents a piece from for the Amazon Kindle, and of course I can have Alexa, which I've brought with me, the Amazon Echo, read that to me, read those books to me, and that's very convenient for me, because I can do that while I'm driving, as opposed to try to find time reading otherwise. So let me see if I can find my where is it at? Kindle book list. There we go. Okay, Kindle books. So I bought a couple of books. Now, I'm going to destroy this guy's name. He's a Russian author from the 1800s. I think he died in 1881, I believe. But there's this, one of the books is The Brothers Karamazov. The Brothers Karamazov. And the author's name is Fyodor, F-Y-O-D-O-R, Fyodor, and his last name, Dostoevsky, that doesn't really roll off the tongue. There's a lot of Russian words that just don't really roll off the tongue very well. Dostoevsky, if I practice, I can do it. Dostoevsky. Fyodor I want to say Dots, but it's Dost. Fyodor Dostoevsky. So, and this is a novel, and then he's got this other one that I bought, and I've started actually listening to the other one. It's The Possessed, and sometimes it's translated as The Devils, because this guy was Russian and he wrote these books in Russian. It's the same author, Dostoevsky. But in The Brothers Karamazov, The Brothers Karamazov, in that book, he has a line in there that's quite interesting. And the line is, if God does not exist, let's see, if God does not exist, everything is permitted. Now think about that for a moment. If God does not exist, everything is permitted. That's a simple statement, but it's profound at the same time. It's a profound truth. If God does not exist, everything is permitted. And so you can see that there are forces in the world that are trying to eliminate God from people's lives, eliminate God's influence from people's minds, stamp any sort of influence of God out of people's minds. And once you've done that, then everything is permitted. It's okay to kill people. It's okay to rape and rob and murder and pillage. It's perfectly fine. Everything's just a shade of gray. If God doesn't exist, everything is permitted. It's very simple. Of course, God does exist. You know, so, but if you're separated from your Creator by resentment and being proud of it, or being proud of what it turns you into, you know, you have the pride marches, and we can all name different kinds of pride marches. You know, be proud that you killed your baby, you aborted your baby. Let's have an abortion pride march. It's absurd. But if you're separated from your Creator, if you're separated from the identity that could come through from your Creator, from within, then by definition, everything becomes shades of gray. And then, you know, then you find other people that will agree with you that right is wrong and wrong is right, and things can begin to be 180 degrees out of phase. It becomes much easier to kind of think in the wrong way. And as I was also kind of talking about in the podcast last night, then once you're in that state, once you're separated, the farther you're separated from who you could have been, people that are actually closer to the Creator represent on the outside what you've fled from on the inside. Then they become the problem. You've tried to kill your own conscience. You know, and God help you if you have. You've killed your own conscience, then you want to kill the other people, anybody else that still looks like they might have a conscience. And of course, the solution, if you don't like living your life that way, the solution is to be still. There's a line in the Bible: be still and know that I am God. In other words, be still and allow the knowing to catch up with you. And it will. It will catch up with you. It's actually very simple. You know, you want to have faith? You know, how do you have faith? What is that? What is faith? How do you have it? You know, the only faith that you can really have to begin with is faith that if you are still, if you learn to become still, that the knowing will catch up with you, and that the knowing is a worthwhile thing to allow to catch up with you. If you can learn to be still, then you have to have faith that there is an identity waiting for you that's going to come through that knowing. But then the problem that we all have is that knowing, we see that knowing that we've fled from, that we've spent our lives running away from, we see that as some sort of a big, bad, guilty conscience. And somehow society just programmed us with that, and we just need to stamp it out, get rid of it. Because it makes us feel bad. We want to feel good. We want to feel good. We want to feel like we're God. But of course we're not. And we cannot be. And there is no peace of mind if you're separated from your Creator. There is no peace of mind. It doesn't exist. In the same way, if there is no God, if there is no God, then everything is permitted. In the same way, if there is no God, there is no peace of mind. There's only finding people that are worse than you are. And then, you know, kind of living by comparison. Feeling good about yourself because, you know, sort of lording it over someone else. Whether you like it or not. Destroying your children, whether you like it or not. But like I say, I just started listening to that, the first book, the Brothers Kasparov. Or no, it's not Kasparov. Karamazov. The Brothers Karamazov. And that looks like that's a very long novel. And I'll warn you, it's not... You know, the way it's written, it's really considered a classic masterpiece of Russian literature. This guy, Dostoevsky, Fyodor Dostoevsky. I'm going to practice that and be able to say that. This should be able to flow right off my tongue. He's got a total of 5 books that are really considered classics, but these two in particular, I came across a recommendation, and as I say, I started listening to the first one, and so I will kind of be listening to that through that Amazon Echo, and you know, it should be put that Echo to good use. But in the other book, the one that's The Possessed, and as I say, sometimes it's translated as Demons, the title of it, that the guy predicted. He wrote this book. He published it, I think, in 1871. And he really, from what I know about the book, he really predicted with stunning accuracy the Russian Revolution that happened well after his death, The Russian Revolution didn't happen until 1917, but he predicted the whole thing, you know, just with stunning accuracy. So the guy, you know, kind of really knew, you know, by studying revolutions, looking at what happened in the French Revolution, as well as you go back to the Bible, the Tower of Babel. He was able to predict what was going to happen in Russia, and it did. And millions of people were slaughtered. So we have this idea, you know, if you go to, you know, and I like science fiction. You know, I like watching science fiction stories, and there's a lot of science fiction stories about time travel. And time travel always makes for kind of interesting storylines, and then you get into the idea of paradoxes and that type of thing. And a lot of, I also watch a lot of science shows, science documentaries about physics, etc. And some of them like to hold out the idea that they're really, you know, there's nothing in physics that would prevent us from time travel, that would stop us from being able to travel in time. Now, on the face of it, I don't care what they say about how the math works. You know, supposedly, you know, with the mathematics, the mathematical model, time doesn't matter. There is no arrow of time. However, my common sense tells me that traveling in time, going back in time, is not possible. All there is the present moment. Now, you theoretically, you can travel forward in time at a faster rate if you could somehow figure out how to travel, you know, get your spaceship to travel near the speed of light, then time is going to slow down. It's going to pass, be the same for you on your spaceship that's traveling near the speed of light, but from an observer's point on Earth, you would barely be moving. And if you could somehow go somewhere, like to another star system near the speed of light, and then, you know, you come back, you make your trip back, then you're going to end up far in the future. However, you're not really in the future. You're still in the present moment. You've simply experienced the present moment sort of at a different rate than the people that you left behind. It's still the present moment. You haven't really traveled into the future any more than we all are. In a sense, we're all time travelers. The present moment is always passing into the future. But there really is no way of going back in time because all there really is the present moment. You know, if you decided, well, I'm going to go back in time, well, how do you go back to a present moment in the past? There's no such thing. There is no such thing as a present moment in the past. There's only one present moment, and that present moment is right now. So, time travel, while it's a nice science fiction plot, makes for nice science fiction plots, interesting science fiction plots, it doesn't exist, and it cannot ever exist. Sorry. hate to break your bubble, if you somehow believe that technology was going to make time travel possible, it can't. Because all there is the present moment. If you could travel near the speed of light, as I say, you could end up sort of altering your point, you know, your present moment, you know, sort of maybe slowing down your, from this point of view, slowing it down or speeding it up from the observer on the earth, you know, you'd be appearing to just be not moving, sort of frozen in time. But from your point of view, time would be passing, the moments would be passing normally. But in reality, as I say, once you made it back, it would still be the present moment. Those present moments would just be stretched out in a sense, because the faster you go, the closer you approach the speed of light, the more that present moment that you're experiencing is normal time, traveling near the speed of light, simply becomes stretched out. And so it's still the present moment. And that's all there is. So that's pretty simple. And you know, if you look at it really logically, then that's it. There is no way around that. There is no way, the idea that we're going to jump to some other present moment cannot be. Because there's only one. You know, now, so why would people want to travel back in time? One of the things people, they'd say, well, I'd go back and I would tell myself not to do something, whatever it is, not to make them, you know, that turned out to be the mistake, not to do that. Why would you do that? You know, because you can't. It's not possible. The closest that we can come to that is to actually be aware in the present moment. And you know, stop running away from the knowing that lives in the present moment. So, you know, but do you want to have peace of mind? You know, people say, oh, I want to have peace of mind. Well, how do you get that? You're going to get it by taking a drug? Are you going to have peace of mind, if you buy your new car or your new house or whatever it is? Is that going to give you peace of mind? No, I'm afraid it won't. It can't. It cannot. There's only one way that you can find real peace of mind, genuine peace of mind, and that is, you know, learn to be still. Be aware in the present moment and allow the present, you know, the knowing that's in the present moment to catch up with you. And that's all. That's it. That's all it takes. But for a lot of people, that's a terrifying thought. That's a terrifying thought. They would rather escape from that knowing, stamp out that knowing, separate themselves from God so that they can be God in their own mind. And if there is no God, everything is permissible. They can do whatever they want. And there's a lot of people that think that if they could just do whatever they wanted, they'd be quote-unquote happy. Somehow they might find peace of mind. But the reality is it's not there. Peace of mind is not in people, places, or things. The only real peace of mind is to learn to be still and allow the knowing to catch up with you. It's very simple. Nothing complicated about it at all. So that's basically, I think, what I wanted to talk about. Let's see, anything else? Having problems again with my fuel-fired bunk heater. It's running at the moment, but it's not putting out a whole lot of heat. It's putting out a little bit of heat. But lately what it does, after it's ran for a while, it cuts off. There must be some sort of an automatic shutoff. And so it just shuts off, and then if I turn it back on, and it, you know, a little while later, it'll shut back off. Now, it's right now, it's liable to run for a few hours before it shuts off, but there's a really good chance that it's going to be shutting off here sometime after I go to bed. So I'm prepared. It's supposed to get down to 38 degrees here tonight at Winslow, Arizona. So I'm prepared. I've got this. I've actually got two sleeping bags. I've got a lighter one that I often, you know, I use it as a blanket. And then I've got a heavy-duty one that I can, you know, I'll be perfectly comfortable at 38 degrees. I might even be too hot in it if I, and I certainly won't zip it up. I just kind of fold it over. But I'll just go ahead and get in that because I know what's going to happen. I know that thing is going to shut off, and 38 degrees, this lighter sleeping bag just isn't really quite heavy enough to be comfortable at 38 degrees. So, but I need to get the truck into the shop and, you know, into a company shop, and they need to do the A-service maintenance where they kind of look everything over, and then I'll once again go ahead and have them repair this fuel-fired heater. You know, this is how many times have I had the thing fixed now? This at least three times in this truck. Just, you know, in not that long of a period of time. So I think in the newer trucks, I think they've tried to get away from it because they've had so much trouble with these things. It's a great idea, and they're, you know, it's ESPAR, S-bar heater. They're a great idea if they work, they're good, but they're just not all that reliable, and it's just a system that just doesn't work. It's not reliable. in my experience. So, anyway, going to go ahead and cut this off. Hope everyone is having a great weekend, and I will catch you later.
Remember, Trucker Tom is like Visa. He's everywhere you want to be.
Product reviews, restaurant reviews, photos, opinions, and more. Visit Trucker Tom's website at www.truckerphoto.com. You've been listening to Trucker Tom's podcast, and we'd love to hear what you have to say. All you have to do is send us an email to tom@truckerphoto.com.